I am Robert McGranahan, and I am the manager of the Detroit Community Academic Urban Research Center based at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. And I am joined today as a co-moderator with Suzanne Selig, who's professor and director of the Department of Public Health and Health Sciences at the U of M University of Michigan Flint. So we're kind of the Michigan team here today, representing both Flint and Detroit and the university. And this is a community-based public health caucus-sponsored session. There's literature in the back there about various things that the caucus is involved with and promotes. I encourage you to help yourself if you haven't already. And this session is called the Gold Standards of Community-Based Participatory Research. And what we're going to do today is Suzanne and I are going to take turns introducing each of the presenters. If we do a good job with keeping them on time, which we hope to do, there should be about 15 minutes or so at the end of the session for questions from you all. So we'll hold off until then. So if you have any burning questions as they're presenting, please write them down so you don't forget them by the end of the session. Everybody will have about 15 minutes to present. Okay. Yeah, Suzanne just pointed out there are a few empty chairs here in the front, so don't be shy. And take a seat. Okay, let's get started then. Our first presentation is entitled Translating Community-Based Participatory Research Principles into Practice, and we're going to have co-presenters today, which I think is great. They're modeling the CBPR principles by having a community and academic partner here. Jessica Burke is a public health social scientist at the University of Pittsburgh School of Public Health, whose research focuses on the interpersonal neighborhood context of urban health disparities. And much of her work addresses low-income women and children and the health topic of HIV/AIDS. And she is joined by her community partner, Sally Hess, who's a research liaison at the House of Ruth in Baltimore.
Thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. I just want to let everybody know Jesse and I were both gray before we started the project. It did not happen as a result of the project. So we have no disclosures, and our objective today is to share with you the outcomes of some CBPR workshops that we conducted, and specifically focusing on taking the principles of CBPR and translating them into practice. So as everybody knows, we all need guidance in CBPR. We come to the table with very different agendas. What's become very, the thing that stands out most in my mind is the time frame. I work at the House of Ruth, Maryland, which is a comprehensive domestic violence service agency in Baltimore City. We need to do things now. We need to find beds. We need to get protection orders. We need to do it today. Our academic partners don't have the same time frame. So that's just one example of coming to the table with very different ideas and agendas. So we need guidance on how we can make these partnerships work, how we can appreciate each other's perspectives. Academics and service providers, for that matter, don't receive a lot of formal training, if any training, in community-engaged research. So we need guidance there as well. A guiding principle of CBPR is that everybody's to be benefiting. Learning about how to more positively conduct this kind of research is benefiting both the academic and the community partners. And there is not a lot out there on actually applying and translating the principles into practice, so we thought it would be a worthwhile endeavor. So we're going to share with you what we did, an initiative that was designed to bring community and academic partners together. We conducted two CBPR workshops. Well, actually, it happened in two different places. We're going to focus on Baltimore. So the outlines for both locations were to conduct CBPR workshops to bring academic and community partners together to learn about, think about CBPR. And then after that, in both sites, we conducted issue identification workshops using the concept mapping approach to delve further into priority health issues in the two areas. So we had sites in Pittsburgh and in Baltimore. We came up with logos or brands for each of the projects. In Baltimore, we came up with the ACT project, Academics and Communities Together to End Violence Against Women. The partnership was between the House of Ruth Maryland, as I said, a domestic violence service agency, and the Center for Injury Research and Prevention and Policy, Center for Injury Research Policy, at Johns Hopkins. And our goal was to come together to work on issues of violence against women. In Pittsburgh, the partnership was between the University of Pittsburgh and the name of it, One Pittsburgh, Oakland Neighbors Engaged. So between the University of Pittsburgh and a community service organization called Community Health Services. So we're going to focus here, as I said, on the Baltimore work. And what we did was we had last fall, a year ago, we had two CBPR workshops where we had 24 community and academic partners. And when I say community partners, we were service providers, domestic violence service providers is how we defined our community. We came together to learn about CBPR together. So in the first workshop, the facilitators presented the principles of CBPR to the group. The group decided that the language was a bit jargony, a bit academic, difficult to easily interpret. So in the first workshop, we reworded, as a group, the principles. And then in the second workshop, we re-presented the rewritten principles to the group and then broke the group down into smaller work groups with trying to get in each work group academics and community partners to interpret the principles, identify how they could put the principles into action, into practice, and then discuss specific challenges to that principle in the field of IPV research. And Jesse's going to now take over with the results.
So thank you, Sally, for that great introduction and overview of the project. The results are sort of twofold, as it's often the case. We have the results in terms of what we actually discussed and how we interpreted the principles, their suggestions for putting the principles into practice. But then we have the evaluation results from the workshops themselves. Ever the academics, right? We asked people about their experiences participating in the workshops as a way of understanding if the process was also helpful and whether or not we should promote the process of working together to gain a greater appreciation for the process and how we might partner in the future. So there's a big long table here. We don't have time to go through it all, but I wanted to just share with you on the left-hand side the original principles that during the first workshop we had sort of brought to the table, and then the revised language that they came up with at that workshop based on the discussion. So it was very much a processing, interpretation, discussion, consensus-building approach to really break it down a little bit further. So there is some language in there that's a little bit harder to process. I just highlighted a couple examples. So you can see the original there and then the revised to enable fairness and equality at each step of the research process. And then number 7 we struggled with for a little while about systems development, what it meant, and it really was a long discussion, super helpful discussion for everyone. It also forced us to articulate as the academic, what do we mean? And then it was a conversation and a dialogue. And what we came up with was build flexibility, feedback, and compromise into the process. So you can just see them there. We also added on a 10th principle based on some of our collaborators' work regarding the fact that conflict is sort of to be expected and disagreement should be anticipated and are actually healthy. So that was great. Again, that was the first workshop. It was meant, there were people who came to the table who had no background or understanding about this approach, and this was a dialogue that we engaged in about what the principles really mean and what we're talking about. And then the second workshop, as Sally mentioned, we really wanted to focus on, okay, so we now have a somewhat common understanding of what we mean, but what can we do to put that into practice? If we were actually making recommendations moving forward about how to grow partnerships, how to grow a partnered research process, what should we do? And a whole range of things came up. This was, again, a two-hour workshop. Lots of discussion, everyone sort of talking about what to do. And we sort of organized it based on a couple issues. And one was the issue of how important communication is, right? And we know that intuitively, but how can we be really aware of it as we move forward, and what can we do to address it? So you'll see here that even how to address each other, so whether or not we should use titles, or we should use Dr. Burke, or if people are comfortable using first names. But those are the types of discussions that should happen at the outset to really say, okay, what would be most appropriate? And it may vary depending upon the project, but having that conversation is a really important first step. So that was one issue about communication. Another was regarding expectations, and Sally already alluded to it and gave a great example, but that we need to be clear from the very start. Again, it's hard because you come to the table, people have different reasons that they're there, potentially different expectations, but to have an open, honest communication about that can be helpful, and revisit it over time. Then another issue that came up was the idea of developing sort of structured protocols. Now, remember, this is the group here. There are 24 people that we talk with. Others may have varying opinions, but for this group, they felt that developing some structure would be very helpful. So their recommendation was to develop structured ways to check in with all group members, such as, you know, making it mandatory that everyone speak at a meeting. That was their suggestion about how we could make sure to check in with everyone and that everyone would have a chance to voice their opinions and ideas. Along those same lines, establishing structured feedback loops. So this was one we struggled with for a little bit, but the idea that if it's supposed to be a feedback process, if it's supposed to be an iterative, flexible, et cetera, process, that you want to have a structured way to do that so that you can share the results, share what you're doing, and that everyone is kept in the loop. And that gets back to a little bit of the communication issues, too. You know, establishing, is it email that might work well for the group to make sure that you take notes and return to them and have that feedback loop? Another one was identifying one person to serve as a liaison from the community and one from the academic institution. That if you have partnerships that have multiple people involved, sometimes side conversations happen, or I talk to someone else and you know, one of our other partners at the House of Ruth, but it's really helpful to make sure that Sally was involved in that process. So she's our primary research liaison at the House of Ruth, and they had recommended that that's a good process to follow as well. And then just one other thing I want to highlight was there was a lot of discussion around the importance of understanding and learning about the history and the current conditions from formal and informal leaders. So talking to people and getting the information that you need, it seems pretty straightforward. But sometimes, again, we sort of get involved and jump in without actually checking in with everyone that we probably should. And finding out what is already known about the particular issue is super important. So those were just a little bit. I know we don't have a whole lot of time. I just got my warning. So I just want to go into the evaluation results were also really important for us to tell us that why did people attend the workshop. So we had 24 people. You know, the majority wanted to learn more about CBPR, and they were interested in actually establishing a CBPR project. So they came to the table and they wanted to understand more about the process and the approach, but then also the discussion regarding what can be done to facilitate that. And 90% said that they were interested in participating in a project, CBPR project, in the future. 85% felt very strongly that the workshops generated ideas about how they could use it in their own work. And that's important, too, because we had a range of service providers and academics there working in this collaborative process and discussion, and that alone really helped to make connections. I mean, I can't tell you, well, Sally will tell you in a minute, but the number of things that sort of happened on the side, but that process, again, of working together was really helpful to generate new partnerships. And then the participants commented that they enjoyed the small groups and the interactive nature of the workshops as being really helpful. So this just reiterates what I've already said, but we were able to rewrite them into language that reflected their perspectives, and that was really helpful. They suggested a whole range of actions for putting the principles into action or practice. There was a fair amount of discussion and attention given to communication, structured procedures, and looking at existing data. And then a majority felt that the workshops generated ideas about how they could use CBPR in their own work. So that tells us that the process worked as well and what is encouraging. So I asked Sally if she could talk a little bit more about what it actually means for our particular partnership as well, because it's an exciting process that we were trying to nurture partnerships here, also nurture our own partnership, and talk about how that's impacted the House of Roof moving forward.
So I think we all felt it was a really positive process. It's a great place to start. It just, if nothing else, for a total of 4 hours, we had academics and community in a room together talking. Everybody on a level playing field with really no agenda, nothing we had to accomplish. So it's been really great. And I think also then those revised principles we can pull back out. And we have been pulling back out. So like when a researcher now calls us to say, oh, we have this great idea to do some research, we need some victims of domestic violence, we sort of pull out our sheet and like, oh, well, let's refer back to number 7. But in a good way, and I think it again, it's providing structure and those relationships are there. We as providers have been more open. I think the researchers have been more inclusive with us. We've had several of them say, hey, I'm getting ready to write a paper. Can we come present our preliminary findings? Get your feedback. Is this crazy what we're coming up with? How can we apply this to practice? We have a network now of people that we can call on. We sort of know each other's expertise and interests. And we're going to hopefully be starting a lecture series where we'll again come together where the researchers will bring us up to date on where we are on the literature on a particular topic related to DV, maybe go into one of the research projects in depth, and then talk about how that can translate into practice in future partnered research. So thank you.